Our reading today is entitled When I Change by the Reverend Teresa Bustillo Garrido. We are here to derive meaning in our actions. We are here to win our power back over areas of powerlessness. We are here to deepen our understanding of ourselves in order to strengthen self-discipline. We are here to abolish prejudice with an appreciation of our diversity and differences. We are here to feel our personal power and our capacity to affect the lives of other people. We are here to become teachers to each other. I'm here to see that my singular life became a gateway to countless possibilities. When I change, the world changes. May we in this hour together, this morning, realize the awesome power that lies between us, if we only choose to do what we are called to do.
The last line, if we only choose to do what we are called to do. What is it that we are called to do? The topic this morning is love and justice and interdependence, and they're big topics. They raise questions that I cannot answer definitively, not even for myself. But that's the nature of the human condition, at least for a Unitarian Universalist who doesn't expect simple answers. We live in a universe that asks us very complex questions, and we're left on our own to make the best of it. For better or worse, we use our all in that situation together. In a universe of very complex and sometimes subtle interactions, it is human to want a simple overarching vision of what is right and what is wrong. And I have an anecdote to illustrate. As many of you know, John Barris Johnson and I attend a weekly meeting with a group of Christian ministers and a rabbi, and it's a congenial group of colleagues who tolerate Unitarian Universalists, surprisingly. So as we gathered last week, the opening chatter was about Donald Trump. That would be no real surprise. It seems like every time you get together with people, he's near the top of the list we're talking about. That time we were still reeling from his attack in this so-called press conference on the idea of the free press and so-called fake news. For me, it's a frightening loss of bearings. To see the President of the United States talking in this way knocks me off my feet. I just feel like all the things that I thought were solid ground are suddenly shifting. Well, after getting over that bit of discussion, settling in, we started our discussion, and we do every Wednesday from the Revised Common Lectionary. This is a 3-year cycle of biblical readings that we use as a starting point for a wide range of discussions. As it happens, this was last Wednesday, and we're looking forward to today. Today, February 26th, in the Christian calendar, is Transfiguration Sunday. And so our reading is related to the story of Jesus being transfigured on a mountaintop before witnesses. His face shone like the sun, his clothes became dazzling white, and if that wasn't enough, Moses and Elijah miraculously appeared, and the voice of God spoke from a cloud. Now bear with me here. I'm not trying to teach you a Bible lesson. But at this point, your heretical minister, possibly without thinking, interjected that the whole event sounded a little bit like fake news. It's one of those points where I said, did I say that out loud? But my wonderful colleagues, fortunately, took it in the spirit that it was intended. See, the fact is that many Christian scholars, while they would never use the term fake news in this context, nevertheless, they see the stories of the miracles surrounding Jesus' life and resurrection as literary constructions that don't represent actual factual events. And that, I think, we could call fake news. Now, this comes as a surprise to a lot of people to know that a lot, if not the majority, of mainline Christian ministers, at least, well, I won't go into individual congregations, but they have a very nuanced understanding of the Bible. It's not taken literally. The stories and the facts given in the Bible present a basis to work out our issues with life, and that's what our lectionary group is about. But, you know, in the end, even if you concede that these events are fake news, it really doesn't matter. What matters is how the community develops a consensus or an opinion around those supposed events. What do those stories, real or imagined, mean for the community? In the end, fake news can have as much influence on the community, for good or evil, as so-called real news, whatever that is. Fake news is not about actual individual events. It's about an ideology or a worldview. Facts are either selected or created or ignored to support a particular worldview. Now, before you think I'm knocking Christianity here, let me say that most religions have a basis in fake news of some sort. Be that the Buddhist reincarnation of the Dalai Lama, or Muslim stories of the dictation of the Quran by the angel Gabriel, or Jewish law and Torah given by God to Moses. I'll pause for a minute in case I'm going to be struck by lightning. Or the creation stories of our indigenous peoples. What about Unitarian Universalism? What's our relationship with fake news? Well, this is a bit of a stretch, so hang with me here. In May of 2016, after 3 years of study, the Canadian Unitarian Universalists, through the Canadian Unitarian Council, brought forth a new vision statement for our faith. This congregation participated in several of those meetings, and our own Glenda Butt was president of CUC at the time, put a lot of work into this process. There were a number of ministers involved, and a lot of effort went into it. The entire package included our 6 sources, our 7 principles, but it added 5 aspirations and a clear vision statement. Vision statements, which I have here, reads as follows. As Canadian Unitarian Universalists, we envision a world in which our interdependence calls us to love and justice. Is this really true? Or is this fake news? Well, the answer to that question will depend on us and how we build consensus around this idea, or not. What do we mean in this case by interdependence? My mind goes immediately to economic interdependence, maybe the easiest concept to grasp. My car may be made in Japan, my food may be grown in California, my cell phone made in China, and I depend on these items, and I depend on the people who make them. And those people depend on people like me to buy them. And that's just part of a global economy that provides the wealth that governments tax to provide the social benefits that we all depend on. And while it's relatively easy to grasp the idea of economic interdependence, it's a little bit harder to see how that economic interdependence calls us to love and justice. After all, I'm really depending on marginalized illegal immigrants to pick my food in California, and the masses of impoverished peasants in China to provide the source of low-cost labor for my cell phone assembly. Our economic interdependence calls us to find the lowest cost producer, and in some cases, exploit them in the process. Well then, what about ecological interdependence? We all live on one planet, so we all breathe the same air. Our shores are washed by the same seas. Do threats to the global ecology call me into a relationship of love and justice? From what I can see, they call Unitarian Universalists to support environmental causes, but sometimes just to protect our own well-being. Ecological causes can be associated directly based on a relationship with the suffering people of the world, but I'm afraid that isn't the norm. We need to look no further than Boat Harbor here in Nova Scotia. If ecological independence was calling us to love and justice, we missed the boat. We missed the boat at Boat Harbor, so to speak. What we excel in are largely technical, administrative, and policy problems that call us to seek technical, administrative, and policy solutions. I'm not saying that unfolding environmental disasters don't tug at our hearts. They do. But as our new vision statement implies, is it our interdependence that is the trigger? I don't see that. Interdependence that calls us to love and justice is a more subtle concept than economic or environmental interdependence. As human beings, we crave connection with other human beings, as well as with the natural world. This desire for connection is the basis for all religion and all spirituality. We need to see ourselves in a relationship with the world, not just the victims of random chance. Rabbi Michael Lerner put it this way: a spiritual sensibility encourages us to see ourselves as part of the fundamental unity of all being. If the thrust of the market ethos has been to foster a competitive individualism, a major thrust of many traditional religious and spiritual sensibilities has been to help us see our connection with all other human beings. Here ends the quote. What we really want is a relationship with the world and with its peoples. If we are called to love and justice, then we must have a relationship with those whose just cause we would join. Jiddu Krishnamurti, the great Indian teacher, has said, "Action has meaning only in relationship. And without understanding relationship, action on any level will only breed conflict. The understanding of relationship is infinitely more important than the search for any plan of action." And here ends that quote. If we're motivated by the idea of interdependence in a simplistic way, I'm afraid we'll exclude many people from our call to love and justice, for we won't recognize that our dependence on them. This concept of relationship requires that we recognize that we are all, rich and poor, male and female, young and old, healthy and infirm, we all have gifts to give to one another. We can all benefit from our relationships if we see each other in this light. Lola Watson is an indigenous Australian who's worked for decades for social justice for her people. She's attributed with saying, "If you have come here to help me, you are wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound up in mine, then let us work together." This, for me, captures the idea of true interdependence. Love is the will to extend yourself for the spiritual growth of another person. We can all love, and we can all grow. I'd like to read our new vision statement from the back to the front. That way, our interdependence is the product of our need for love and justice. Love and justice, then, take primacy in our world. And they call forth action. Action that can only be based on relationship. And a relationship that inevitably leads to interdependence. Maybe the statement should be written in a circle. Love and justice calls us to interdependence. That calls us to love and justice. That calls us to interdependence. In order to make this vision statement of the Canadian Unitarian Council more than fake news, we need to deal with the issues of power within our communities that prevent us from recognizing our interdependence. In our capitalist society, power often equates to money. This relationship leads to problems on both sides of the socioeconomic divide, problems in seeing our mutual interdependence. For those who lack resources, financial resources in particular, resentments can build against those who seem to control the purse. And for those with resources, it may not be immediately evident that their well-being depends on the relationship that crosses these boundaries. For both sides of this divide, there is spiritual work to be done. And it begins with building and maintaining relationships. And I'm proud to say that that's the beauty of the Unitarian Universalism, and specifically the beauty in this congregation. We are a place where we recognize our interdependence and work together for mutual spiritual growth. We take that vision beyond the walls of this building. All of this, this call to love and justice and interdependence, is a call to engage in life, to have a relationship with life, to be in love with life. And what does that mean? What does it mean to be in love with life, if not to crave the feeling of being part of all of life and all of creation, and to crave the sense of interdependence that can bring? May it be so.